Thank you very much, Don. And I just want to say, I know I've typed this before, but I want to say it out loud. I love the way you make the announcements. You do a great job. Shauna's agreeing. Yeah. So yeah, tonight's my first night of only 30 minutes of the Guiding Light, because Shauna will be following me now on Sunday night. So welcome, Shauna. This is the Sunday night lineup. Right now, I am finishing up the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. There are just, gosh, 1, 2, 3.5 pages left. So I doubt I'll finish up tonight, but we will be finishing up very soon. And I'm starting on page 104. By the way, now that I only have 30 minutes, I won't be playing music. I'll be skipping that and just diving right into it. So we're starting on page 104, and it's the second devotee question on the page. What prevents the infinite, undifferentiated light of consciousness arising from the heart from revealing itself to the unenlightened? So the question here is basically kind of like, why can't the infinite just knock me on my behind? You know, why do I have to do this spiritual practice? Why do I have to do this self-inquiry? Why is anything required of me? Can't the infinite just come and grab me? You know, grab me and drag me into reality? So what prevents the infinite, undifferentiated light of consciousness arising from the heart from revealing itself to the unenlightened? And this is Ramana Maharshi's answer. Just as water in the pot reflects the enormous sun within the narrow limits of the pot, even so, the vasanas, or the latent tendencies of the mind of the individual, acting as a reflecting medium, catch the all-pervading infinite light of consciousness arising from the heart and present in the form of a reflection the phenomenon called the mind. Seeing only this reflection, the unenlightened is deluded into the belief that he is a finite being, the person. If the mind becomes introverted through inquiry into the source of the I thought, and the latent tendencies become extinct, and in the absence of the reflecting medium, the phenomenon of reflection, namely the mind, also disappears, being absorbed into the light of the one reality, the heart. This is the sum and substance of all that an aspirant need know. What is imperatively required of him is an earnest and one-pointed inquiry into the source of the I thought. So in a nutshell, when the devotee asks what prevents the infinite from revealing itself to the unenlightened, the answer is the mind. And, you know, some might ask, well, isn't the infinite stronger than the mind? You know, why can't the infinite bust through the mind and reveal itself to the unenlightened one? Well, I think that when the question is asked in that way, it's because we have forgotten who we are. Right? We are the infinite. And if we are so absorbed in the mind, we're making a divine choice there, and nothing can force us away from that choice. There's nothing more powerful than what we are. So when a person says, you know, how come the infinite can't reveal itself to the unenlightened, that question is coming from the belief that the infinite and the unenlightened are two different things, right? And that the infinite is more powerful than the unenlightened. It's not remembering that the unenlightened is actually the infinite, with attention focused in the wrong way. So what Ramana Maharshi says is very, very important. There's a lot of latent tendencies in the mind, or we often call those false beliefs and memories, attachments, desires, right? There's a lot of latent tendencies in the mind, and our job, well, the way Inner Ramana put it in the teachings of Inner Ramana was that our job is to simply lose interest in the mind. Right, that's our job. And if you remember that we are the infinite, that we are divine, then you can see how important that job is. You know, self-inquiry is much more important than maybe a lot of people realize. If you genuinely practice self-inquiry and meditation, these latent tendencies will begin to be revealed to you. In fact, on Saturday, so that was yesterday, during my meditation, it's not that I didn't intellectually know this. You know, we often, because of all of our learning, intellectually know things before we have a direct insight, right? So yesterday I had a direct insight. And the direct insight was that the false self is held together by fear. And what's feared is being nothing. And so then, and of course, right this moment, I can't remember everything that was revealed to me during meditation. But then during meditation, I saw what I would call little things, not big things, little things that I do out of fear to maintain the false self. And I wish I could remember them now. You know, I can't in this moment remember what they were. It would be nice if an example would arise. So what is one of the things that I do to maintain the false self out of a fear of being nothing? Okay, so a simple, simple thing would be to say, I like to be outside every day. There's an identification with that. I'm the one who likes to be outside every day. Now, this doesn't mean that the going outside won't still happen. It's the identification with being the one who likes to be outside every day. And we gather lots and lots. I mean, I'm sure there are hundreds or thousands of these little identifications that we gather that create this self-image in the mind that tell me who I am. And the reason I want to know who I am is because I'm afraid of being nothing. Now, nothing here does not mean dead, although that's how the ego interprets it. Nothing here means free of self-image, like a newborn baby. You know, a newborn baby hasn't developed the idea, I'm the one who likes to go outside. You know, I'm the one who prefers old television shows like Gunsmoke to new television shows that are more graphic. I'm the one who loves chocolate. I'm the one who, you know, it's the identification with all of this. And we can then tell people who we are. You know, I can tell you who I am. I'm the one who likes to go outside, who loves chocolate, who prefers older television shows to new television shows. Right? It's a made up idea, self-image. And then what I also saw in my meditation was that I further strengthen my self-image by developing a self-image of you, right? So every single self-image, and this would even include even our are self-images of Jesus. You know, people have ideas about Jesus. You know, again, different ideas, not the same ideas, you know. Like some people really believe in the virgin birth and the bodily resurrection and the miracles. And other people think those things didn't happen, but he was a very clear, very enlightened master. Some people think he was married to Mary Magdalene. Some people don't think they had a child. You know, and we all cling to our beliefs about Jesus, but what we don't see is our beliefs about Jesus are an extension of our own self-image. And that's also true with our beliefs about our parents, our beliefs about our partner, our friends, our children. Every self-image that we come up with is merely an extension of our self-image. And they're all made out of fear. The fear of being nothing, which merely means without a self-image, which actually means just free to be in this moment, whatever is manifesting. So these latent tendencies that Ramana Maharshi are talking about aren't just, you know, what we might think of as the big negative things, you know, like the I am bad thought. It's a whole bundle of identified with ideas that keep the self-image in place so that we don't have to see the truth of ourself as pure, free awareness. Well, pause and think about that for a moment. That's what we're afraid of. We're afraid of just being pure, free awareness without ideas that we cling to about who we are. And yet at the same time, you know, when many people look back on what they really love, for example, the reason one might love to go outdoors is because while outdoors, she allows herself to be pure, free awareness. It's like a trick, you know? I don't notice myself as pure, free awareness because I've decided I'm one who likes to go outdoors. I mean, my goodness gracious. But this fear of being nothing is pretty strong. And it's been driving us ever since we were old enough to begin collecting ideas about who we are and who others are. So our job then is through inquiry to see through these ideas, which he also calls the mind. And he says, this is the sum and substance of all that an aspirant need know. Right? It's kind of like what Jacqueline said this morning about it's not really our job to seek the truth, like you seek a thing. It's really our job to let go of everything that's blocking that present truth. But some of what blocks this present truth is more subtle than we realize. Also, I'm reminded this morning of Kathy Smith when she was sharing during the weekly gathering. She said one of the realizations she had during the dyad, and I think Shauna's, I remember Shauna even saying this in the dyad. I don't know if you remember Shauna. You actually said this in one of your dyads when I was listening. So it's two people that realize this. That we're totally okay with letting go of what we consider the negative stuff. But we kind of like the positive aspects of us. We don't want to let go of that. I don't want to let go of the one who likes to go outside. I see that as a positive aspect, right? And what Kathy was saying that she realized was you have to let go of the whole ball of wax. And then she said right on the heels of that, I don't think I'm ready for that. Why would she say, I don't think I'm ready for that? The same reason any of us would say, I don't think I'm ready for that. Because we're afraid of being nothing. Nothing meaning free, spontaneous awareness. We are driven by fear to say, this is who I am. And we are willing to let go of those things that we aren't so proud of. Right? But we want to cling to those things that we are proud of. And they're equal obstacles to truth realization. So again, the devotee asks, what prevents the infinite, undifferentiated light of consciousness arising from the heart from revealing itself to the unenlightened? And Ramana Maharshi says, just as water in the pot reflects the enormous sun within the narrow limits of the pot, right? Just as water in the pot reflects the enormous sun within the narrow limits of the pot. Now, one thing I want to point out is that the reflection of the sun in the pot is not the sun. I mean, you can dip your fingers in the pot and you're not going to burn yourself, where if you got too close to the sun, you'd disintegrate, right? It's just not the same thing. And the dim human consciousness that is seems very limited to this location, this body, and it's caught up in these point of views, it's a reflection of infinite consciousness, just like the sun is a reflection of the real sun when it's shining in the pot of water. It's a reflection of infinite consciousness, but it cannot be compared to infinite consciousness any more than that sun in the water can be reflected to the real sun. You know, it's just not the same. So he says, just as water in the pot reflects the enormous sun within the narrow limits of the pot, even so, the latent tendencies of the mind of the individual acting as the reflecting medium, which means this is like your narrow pot, your limited pot, your latent tendencies. Even so, the latent tendencies of the mind of the individual acting as the reflecting medium catch the all-pervading infinite light of consciousness arising from the heart and present in the form of a reflection the phenomenon called the mind. Okay. In other words, if it wasn't for the reality of what we are, you know, the word that's being used here is light, but it's that aware, that living awareness. If it wasn't for living awareness on thought, well, thought would be absolutely nothing, because on its own it is absolutely nothing. It's really the living awareness that we are that's giving the attention to the thought that makes the thought so limiting. Right, we do it through our own power. And this is why I said earlier, the infinite cannot break through that, because we are the infinite and we're the ones giving the power to thought. We have to decide we don't want to do that anymore in a very genuine and real way, not just talk. I'm often amazed at retreats, and this has been true for years, not just recently. I'm often amazed at retreats how, you know, we'll have these incredible mornings, for example, of contemplation, meditation, insight, and, you know, people are so absorbed in it. And then we go to lunch and all the people are back again that fast. You know, all it took was getting up and walking from one place to another place. And we're right back to giving all of our attention to our thoughts, right back to believing this is who I am, right back to sitting there at the table telling others who I am and what I like and what I don't like, that fast. You know, and this is what we need to catch. This is what we need to decide we don't want to do anymore. And we can have rules at the retreat house like complete silence, and in complete silence, it appears you can't do that anymore, but the truth is, I suspect that most people are sitting around eating in complete silence and right back to the thinking. So even a rule like silence, that may assist people in making that decision because no one else is talking to them, right? But it doesn't make the decision. You have to make the decision that you aren't going to return to the thoughts. And remember, down below, he says, this is the sum and substance of all that an aspirant needs to know. So just as water in the pot reflects the enormous sun within the narrow limits of the pot, even so the vasanas, or the latent tendencies of the mind of the individual, acting as the reflecting medium, catch the all-pervading infinite light of consciousness arising from the heart, and present in the form of a reflection the phenomenon called the mind. But again, who's reflecting on the mind? Seeing only this reflection, not paying attention to the awareness that's looking at the thoughts, seeing only the thoughts. And this is why self-inquiry is so important. Who sees this thought? What sees this emotion, right? What sees this desire? But see, the average person, as you know, doesn't do that. The average person looks only at the thought, only at the desire, only at the emotion. They're not noticing the I'm going to call it life-giving awareness that's making that thought seem so alive. So seeing only this reflection, the unenlightened one is deluded into the belief that he is a finite being, the person. If the mind becomes introverted through inquiry into the source of the I thought, and the latent tendencies become extinct, and in the absence of the reflecting medium, the phenomenon of reflection, namely the mind, also disappears, being absorbed into the light of the one reality, the heart. Now the mind here, in this particular sentence, is attention. Recently we did a meditation at the retreat house. Jay and Shauna were both there, so of the few of us here, Don is the only one that wasn't there. So this is a review for them, information for Don only. But we did a meditation the other day where we spent time looking at sensations, thought, attention, and noticing we weren't any of those things. Right? Noticing that we were aware of sensation, we were aware of thought, and we were aware of attention. But we were not any of those things. And some of the questions I remember asking in the meditation were, who are you if you can be aware of attention? You know, what are you if you are aware of attention? Well, attention is what Ramana Maharshi calls the mind, not the thoughts. He sometimes does too, but right now, not the thoughts. It's the attention that gives the power to the thoughts, which is made up of awareness. I've often called it like a contracted, you know, compacted awareness. It's where general awareness is very open and very free. It's almost like it goes like this and then goes like this into whatever it's paying attention to, right? And that's what Ramana Maharshi is right now referring to as the mind, this power that gives so much power to thought. And what he's saying is, if you can lose interest in the thought, this power, this mind, what I call attention, will become reabsorbed into the general open awareness and cease to be, because what it does is it looks away from awareness. So when it's reabsorbed into awareness, it ceases to be a looking away from power. And guess what you become enlightened to? You know, one thing that I've always appreciated about this stuff is that it makes sense. It's almost like it's mechanical, right? Somehow, awareness developed this ability to focus, project, narrow, and then it created objects, and it became a the ability to focus on those objects, narrow its awareness to just this thought, just this idea. I mean, we all know you can drive a car thinking about thought and not even see where you're driving, right? And now what we're doing is we're just reversing that process. We lose interest in the object. The attention has nowhere to go. The attention diffuses, disappears back in its source, and then we become aware of the source, which is our truth. But all of this can't happen if we're still focusing our attention on our thoughts and our beliefs, our desires, on our emotions, right? We have to begin to lose interest in it. And then Ramana Maharshi says, this is the sum and substance of all that an aspirant need know. I mean, right here in 30 minutes. The sum and substance of everything that we need to know. What is imperatively required of him is an earnest and one-pointed inquiry into the source of the I thought. And again, it's through examining that I thought. What is this I thought? What? In fact, I think, although again, I can never remember really clearly what happens in meditation, but I think that the question I was really asking and really asking and looking was, what is this sense of I, of me? You know, what is this sense? I feel like a person. What is the sense that makes me feel like a person? And by inquiring into that question, which in effect is inquiring into the I thought, that's when I began to receive silent, intuitive answers that enabled me to see the fear of being nothing that causes us to build and maintain a self-image. And that's the answer to the question. This is where the feeling of I am a person comes from. So through self-inquiry, through really wanting to know where does this I thought come from, we can have insight that then will help us undo the exact habits that we're involved in that build the sense of person and therefore hide our true self. And with that, I am done. Thank you, everyone.